Welcome to the Need to Know podcast from the Wilson Center, a podcast for policymakers available to everyone. Always informative, nonpartisan, and relevant, we go beyond the headlines to understand the trend lines in foreign policy. I'm John Molesky, and this is Need to Know. Welcome back to another episode. Well, around the world and in the United States, stories about refugees and asylum seekers are often framed in terms of fears, negative impacts, with assumptions about the burdens created by an influx of people in need. A new groundbreaking study of the U.S. economy over a 15-year period appears to turn that conventional wisdom on its head. Here to discuss the findings of the HHS study is the director of the Wilson Center's Refugee and Forced Displacement Initiative. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program John Thon Majok. John Thon, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
So tell us about this study looking at the years 2005 to 2019, which uncovered an overwhelmingly positive fiscal impact. Talk about it for us, please.
Yes, it's very hard to get positive news these days because of what is going on around the world. But the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration, where the Office of Refugee Resettlement is located, had this groundbreaking finding study done between 2005 and 2019, so 15-year period. And the findings are very encouraging and relevant to the current discourse on immigration as we face southern border inflow and fears among citizens of the numbers. So the study shows that refugees and asylees have contributed more than $123 billion to the U.S. economy and the government budget. And this is very important because this is the first federal government study, and the net gain here, the net positive, is that refugees have contributed more revenue in taxes than what the government has spent on them, whether at the local level, state level, or the federal government level. And so I'm here to highlight this key takeaway from this report because they are very relevant in what we do here at the Wilson Center, the Refugee and Forced Displacement Initiative. Want to skip the narrative on this.
I want to, you say highlighter, and I want to put a highlighter on that number again. That $123.8 billion net fiscal benefit when you calculate how much the government spent to get these folks resettled. This is how much money they contributed. And one of the other findings, John Thon, it seems that the longer they stay, the more they offset the costs of that settlement or resettlement.
That is correct. And that again, for the public and for anybody out there, it's very important because, as we all know, there is cost to everything we do. Whether you raise a child or you put a child to school in the first 12 years of his life, you put that cost there. But you hope that there is going to be a return on investment. This report sheds a light on that even though there are initial costs for resettling refugees and processing asylum seekers inside the United States, that cost is offset in the long term. And so the longer you will be in the United States as a permanent resident or a naturalized citizen as a resettled refugee, the more the positive contribution in terms of economic impact.
Were you surprised by the findings?
I think the volume itself in terms of monetary number, little bit surprising, but what I was surprised about is that this was the first federal study on this issue. And the United States has been resettling refugees since 1980s. We have more than 3.2 million resettled in this country. So I'm surprised by by the fact that this was the first study. This again tell us more about again the impact of a humanitarian program on the economy. There are cultural impact, the positive aspect of this, which is not to be discussed in this study. But I think that's a groundbreaking indeed, since this is the first study.
Harder to measure some of the other things like the cultural impact. Is that so the study, just to be clear, the study focuses on those who were granted asylum or received refugee status in the U.S. after the year 1980. So this doesn't include people who came in under the radar. Is that correct?
That is correct. And that's the sole focus here is those refugees and asylees that are helped by the Office of Refugee Resettlement in HHS. And those that came after 1980s, that is a limitation of the report. But despite this, there is this compelling evidence demonstrating the impact, the positive impact of the program domestically.
One of the things it seems to suggest, the implications for policy, is that if you have an orderly system, you get a much more positive outcome. When there's a plan, when there's an investment in people, when there is the granting of asylum, when these things happen in an orderly fashion. So with that in mind, when you look at activity on the Hill currently, we see this Grace Act sponsored by Senator Markey. There have been a number of hearings in both the House and Senate. What are the implications for policymakers? I know the report is fairly new and you may not have had time to fully process this, but when you think about it in terms of activity on the Hill, what are the policy implications? What should we take away from this when crafting policy or creating reforms around whether it's border policy or broader policy?
I think the implication here is that despite everything else, the narrative often told about refugees or asylum seekers as passive victims, this net positive is the human face of the numbers we discuss, that these real human beings, once given opportunity, they contribute like us. And I think one of the finding, the key takeaway there is that when you compare this particular group with the U.S. Population, it is comparable. You know, when they live here 10 years or more, the level of contribution here is comparable with the rest of the native-born here. And so the human aspect of this is these are people, once given the opportunity, because first of all, refugees are different from the general migrants, the economic migrant. Refugees first seek safety, and when they are safe, they can contribute. Unlike economic migrants, they seek economic opportunities. And these people are running away from conflict and war that we see around the world. And so that distinction and the implication in terms of how much they contribute once we brought them through the legal process to our borders, we see they also contribute to our society.
Yeah, I mean, these are people eager to start a new life because they're leaving traumatic circumstances behind. It's not just coming to visit family. They're on the run from usually war or violence of some sort. Let me shift gears and move off the study and talk about your attendance at the Global Refugees Forum in Geneva back in December, sponsored by the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. This is our first chance to catch up with you since then. What are the main takeaways from the 2023 forum?
Yeah, before I go there, and again, for correction, I did not attend. I did not attend, but I'm again giving my key
takeaway. You followed it closely.
From the forum, yeah. But I think a gateway to that is that another implication for this domestic report that we're just discussing is that refugees must be engaged meaningfully on issues that affect them, and as contributors, not as just storytellers. And I think when they are engaged meaningfully, given the opportunity, then they contribute productively and contribute to the global treasury, domestic treasury. And one of the key takeaways from the Global Refugee Forum, that is, it's held every 4 years, and the second one was held last year in December in Geneva. The first one was 2019, and it's part of the Global Compact on Refugees that was passed by the UN General Assembly in 2018. So I want to talk about the positive aspect first. The first impression is that there is an encouraging trend of meaningful participation by refugees in this kind of forum. In 2019, there were only 72 refugee delegates attending the Global Refugee Forum. This year, there were 300 refugee delegates attending. And even though it's still, there's more need to be done, there is a recognition that refugees must be active participants on issues that affect them. So I think that one is a key takeaway. The other one is, of course, we need to walk the talk and talk the walk. And if what we say is different from what we do, then there is a disconnect there. So oftentimes, commitments are made in all of this. Countries make commitment in terms of financial pledges, but then the delivery is a different thing. So we need to match, translate all these pledges into actions, because countries that are hosting refugees are very resource-stretched as well. And despite the fact that they are feeding their own citizens, these host countries have made their share in terms of the global responsibility to host a number of refugees. So that is translating commitments, financial commitment, to real meaningful action, to be able to see the progress on this. Otherwise, we will turn these kind of forums and then we call it a day.
You know, talk is cheap, right? I mean, I think of when famously Lech Walesa addressed the U.S. Congress a long time ago during the Solidarity Movement, and he said, "Let actions follow words now." I think you're making the same challenge here to the Global Forum.
John, yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. One of the other things, as I mentioned, is the trend here in terms of meaningful participation of refugees.
Yes.
One of the things that happened right away was that refugees were not represented as they supposed to be, because some of them were denied visas to enter Switzerland. And that is a concern, because, again, going back to making sure our action match what we say, if we say meaningfully mean that refugees should participate in this forum, we should find ways to bring them through the process. If it means starting the process earlier to obtain visas, then be it. If it means give them special visas for them to attend this kind of forum, then be it. But I think that is a barrier right now, and hopefully in the next forum that will happen 2027.
Yeah, all the difference in the world, right? Talking with people versus talking about people.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, John Thon, thank you. As always, you shed a lot of light on this and give us a broader perspective than the typical conventional wisdom that is attached to these issues. And I should tell our viewers and listeners that if they want more information on RAFDI, the Refugees and Forced Displacement Initiative, the program you lead, they can visit wilsoncenter.org and find out more. Thanks again.
Thank you, John.
So that's all for now. You know that you'll find, if you come to wilsoncenter.org, more information on this podcast and many more, along with valuable content from RAFDI and other programs. We hope you enjoyed this and it was beneficial to you. I learned a lot. Until next time, for all of us at the Center, I'm John Molesky, and I want to thank you for your time and your interest.